Welcome to Food for Thought, the place to explore, celebrate, and manifest a life motivated and defined by unconditional compassion and optimal wellness. My name is Colleen Patrick-Goudreau, and I'm your host. The mission in my work is to empower people to manifest their values of compassion and wellness in their everyday lives. You can learn more about who I am and what I do by visiting my website, joyfulvegan.com. Hi, everyone. I just want to give a shout out first before we begin to listeners in Arizona. I want to make sure that you know that I'm going to be there giving a talk at Arizona State University's Tempe campus. It's a lecture and a reception at 4 o'clock on December 4th, 2014. And then that evening, I will be speaking again at 7 p.m. at Changing Hands Bookstore Tempe, followed by a book signing. So visit joyfulvegan.com/connect. Just click on connect for all of the details. And I hope to see you all in Arizona. All of you. I hope you all come to Arizona, wherever you are now. Just go to Arizona, December 4th. Also, I am very excited to tell you that after an incredibly successful trip, our first vegan Italy trip with CPG in June of this year, we are going back and planning the next one, also to the Cilento Amalfi region. We're changing some things up. We had a fabulous trip, period, and we learned a lot of things. So the itinerary is super fabulous, and it's going to be fantastic. So I want you to know that I am planning that. It will be in June of 2015. June 20th to the 27th, and we haven't announced it yet. I just want you to know that I want you to stay tuned, and you can please join the mailing list if you are interested in hearing about it first on the mailing list, and go to joyfulvegan.com to do that. And then, of course, before that trip, we have the Holistic Holiday at Sea cruise in the Caribbean that I'm doing again this year, and I'll be giving some cooking demonstrations and talks, and of course, there's lots of other vegan speakers and chefs, etc. So again, visit joyfulvegan.com/connect, and that's where you'll find all of my upcoming speaking engagements and trips and events. And if you do sign up and you heard about it from me, please let them know that you heard about it from me, because I think they give me a little commission when people hear about it through me and then sign up. So that's pretty cool. So thank you for that. And of course, just having gotten back from London and Ireland, I am excited to share all of this with you. I'm going to share England with you in this one. Well, really, it was just London and Ireland, which was mostly Dublin, but also north of Belfast. We were in Northern Ireland for just a bit. And I will be sharing that information, that trip with you in the next episode. If I included both in this episode, it would be way too long. And of course, we wouldn't have any time for what would Colleen do questions, WWCPGD questions. So we'll get to the details about the trip in just a minute. And I want to thank all of you supporters out there for sponsoring this podcast. Our supporters list is growing, as you can see. You can see on Patreon who and how many people are supporting this. But if you listen and get anything out of this podcast, I really need you. Every penny goes into the work that I do. And frankly, most of the money that comes to me from you goes to other people supporting me doing this. So, you know, I've got help through the podcast engineer. I've got an assistant to help me kind of keep churning out as much content as possible. And she takes care of a lot of the administrative work, and she's really helping me curate all of the content. So, you know, the money goes to her basically. So if you really want me to keep doing this and doing it well and churning out content that I know is changing lives and saving lives, please become a supporter. You can go to joyfulvegan.com and see the buttons there and become a supporter. Thank you to new gold members, Jackie Marshall and Natasha Dankovich, for your support. And thank you to new platinum member, Valentina Zenkel. Valentina is a longtime supporter, and you may have even heard me thank her in the past, but she just increased her sponsorship to platinum, which is just incredible. And I'm so grateful. And here's what she said. This is what she wrote to me to tell me why she did this. She wrote, "My dear Colleen, after somebody asked me again why I decided to become vegan, I concluded that it was because of you. I realized how much your work has done and still does for me, and I decided to become a platinum member to support your work all I could. You are the one who opened my eyes and, most importantly, my heart. At my 22 years of age in college and living at home, I could say it hasn't been easy at all to extend my compassion to everyone, especially those who I so love, non-human animals. I live in Mexico, Mexico, where it's even more strange and unacceptable to be vegan than in the United States. However, you were not only the one who opened up my heart, but also my palate and opportunity to be accepted by others, including my family. I absolutely love cooking, and I would be so excited to join your cooking classes, traveling wherever necessary to take them. You are my inspiration, my hero, and your recipes have made my family open up their perception of what it means to be vegan and still eat deliciously. I'm a complete fan of your books. I have them all, and I use your cookbooks every day. My favorite podcast episode was The Burden of Burros, because donkeys are my favorite animal, because they're amazing. I know, Valentina, I know of what you speak. And being in Mexico, I do hope to open my own sanctuary with especially donkeys as residents here. That would be amazing. Goodness knows, donkeys need it in Mexico. And anyway, that's my aside. Valentina continues, you are invited to our home. Please come to Mexico and we'll receive you with open arms. As everybody already knows about you, we'll provide you with everything necessary for your travel. It's very sweet. Thank you for being a voice for the animals and an inspiration for all of us. Thank you also from my babies, Asterix, Merida, Chihiro, and Florecita. Asterix and Merida are my two dogs, and Chihiro and Florecita are my two cats, and they love you too. Thank you for being so wonderful. Thank you, Valentina. Thank you for being so wonderful and for your incredible, generous support. I'm so grateful. Thank you. I hope to make you proud and all the critters proud. And speaking of gratitude, thank you to AAVS, the American Anti-Vivisection Society, for sponsoring this podcast episode, along with all of you listeners out there. AAVS is one of the oldest animal protection organizations in the United States, and their entire mission is to end the use of animals in science through education, advocacy, and the development of alternative methods, which is really significant. Because of the work AAVS is doing, we, all of us, can help ban the use of animals in testing cosmetics and their ingredients, as well as ban the sale of cosmetic products containing animal-tested ingredients. It is true. And all you have to do is ask your congressperson to support the Humane Cosmetics Act, which was recently introduced to Congress. You can make this happen in your lifetime. All you need to do is go to aavs.org/Humane Cosmetics Act. You just type in your address, you find your congresspeople, and you can send them a letter directly through that website encouraging them to say yes to the Humane Cosmetics Act. So please show your support. Let's see this happen in our lifetime. I cannot wait to announce that it's happened. So with your help, we can make this possible and send it to 5 people today and ask them to do the same. It's a really simple act that people can take. So go to aavs.org/Humane Cosmetics Act. And while you're there, check out all the other amazing work that AAVS is doing. They're really fabulous, and I support them and respect them immensely. And before we start, I want to read another love letter, because you, I know, love this and I love to share them with you. And I think it's really important to hear about people from all around the world and how they're changing and opening their hearts and minds and palates. Hi, Colleen. First of all, I would like to thank you for your compassion, eloquence, and grace. You have empowered me to speak my truth, and for that, I'm eternally grateful. What I find most rewarding about following your work is that through your words, you have helped me to be able to reason out the answers to my own "what would Colleen do" questions. You are not simply giving me your words. You are teaching me to find mine. That's from Beth. That's incredible, Beth. I couldn't ask for anything more than that. I have emphasized so much in my work that I am not looking to make little replicas of me and the way I say things and the way I respond to things. I want you all to find your own voice and to speak from your heart and your truth. And all I can do is kind of, you know, give you tips about how I do it, but I really ultimately encourage you to find your own voice. And so, Beth, you couldn't have given me a better gift than sharing that with me. Thank you so much. And last but not least, before moving on to London, we're going to London. Thank you also to Fake Meats for sponsoring today's episode at fakemeats.com. I don't know about you, but I love, 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 love supporting family-owned vegetarian businesses, which is exactly what Fake Meats is. They are fabulous. Steven and Kim founded Fake Meats so that you can enjoy a huge selection of vegan meats featuring the popular brands that you all know and love, and some that you may not have heard of that you can find at fakemeats.com. They feature a huge selection of vegan jerky and vegan meats and egg replacers and seasoning and sauces, and they also have a lot of great holiday and gift items, which is perfect time to stock up on your holiday gifts and foods. So you can get vegan gravy mixes and flavorful bouillons. I love bouillons. I love cooking with bouillon cubes. They're so easy, so fabulous, and they have fabulous ones over at fakemeats.com. You can get vegan jerky gift baskets, which is great for vegans and vegetarians and meat eaters alike. If you need to get a gift for coworkers, or maybe there's some kind of gift basket auction kind of thing that you want to donate to something that's going on around the holidays, or maybe in your apartment complex or your neighborhood, or to your mail carrier. So you want to be able to advocate for veganism and give a gift to someone at the same time. This is perfect. Vegan jerky gift baskets. How fabulous is that? So check out fakemeats.com. And as a bonus for all of you special listeners out there, you receive a coupon to receive 15% off any $20 order. That is so incredible. So $3 off of a $20 order is significant. So use the coupon code podcast14. Go to fakemeats.com, stock up on your vegan meats and gifts, and type in podcast14 for $3 in savings, 15% in savings, which is pretty fabulous. So go. I'll be here when you get back. Okay, you're back. And I have been to London and back, and I encourage you all to close your eyes and imagine yourself in London in the fall, which is my favorite time to go to the UK. We were just there, what was it, last year when we did York and kind of Yorkshire and the Lake District and Edinburgh? We were there in October. And if you haven't listened to that podcast episode, I encourage you to do so. I think it's called Vegan in England and Scotland Through the Eyes of a, I don't know, Anglophilic, book-centric history. I don't even know, but you can find that episode over at my website. And I really do love going in the fall. It's my favorite time of year to go. Even if there's some rain, I kind of expect it and I like it, and it's kind of romantic and moody. And especially since we've been in a 3-year drought here in California, I am welcoming rain. I want rain on my person because we have no rain and we need it so badly. So I love going to the UK and that whole area in the fall. And we just happened to have kind of the perfect weather when we were there too. You never know what you're going to get. Last time we were in London, that was about 10 years ago for Halloween, actually, it rained a lot. But again, it doesn't bother me because I love the feeling I get when I'm there, and I want to transport all of you to that feeling. So we started our journey, of course, prior to our journey. And, you know, I travel a lot and I really like being comfortable and happy when I travel. So I put a lot of systems in place to make sure this is possible for me before I travel. So one of the things we did before we left, obviously, is we were taking a nonstop flight from San Francisco to London, which is an overnighter, which I prefer so that you don't have to spend time during the day traveling. I don't want to lose a day. But it's hard for me because I don't sleep on the plane. I do not sleep on the plane at all. And someone had recommended I try Tylenol PM, which I did this time. I took like 2, I mean, whatever, just a small amount, which I hope 2 is a small amount. I wouldn't recommend more than 2, so that's probably the normal amount. And it was a nightmare because all it did was make me dehydrated because of the antihistamines in the Tylenol PM. And so what would happen is I would maybe nod off for about 10 minutes and then wake up with such a dry mouth that I couldn't even swallow and would have to drink water. And then I'd have to go to the bathroom like every 10 minutes. So it was kind of a nightmare to try and take anything to help me fall asleep. So in the future, I will not be trying that again. This was the first time I ever did anything like that. And I won't be doing it again. I will just suffer and stay awake. I think there's nothing worse than trying to sleep and not being able to. So I'm just going to not try next time. And of course, David, I hate him. He falls asleep the second we hit we sit on the plane, and he's like he's drugged. He starts sleeping, and I hate him for that. I don't hate him. Calm down. I love him and hate him. So before we got on the plane, we, of course, stock up on movies on our iPad and laptops, and we stock up on books and food, and those are the essentials, right? So making sure we have movies to watch and books to read and food to eat. And I have a travel pillow. David has a travel pillow. And, you know, I'm just aware of what I wear when I fly, you know, what shoes I would take off if I'm wearing socks, those kinds of things. So you know, I want to be as comfortable as possible. We all do. And our day of travel went off without a hitch. We had already bought in advance some food. So we had tofurkey sandwiches made, which travel really well. We had some chickenless salad that we got at Trader Joe's. We had nuts and dried fruit and some energy bars and I think a couple apples. So, you know, we weren't going to starve. So that was a good thing. And so we packed all of that up. My cat sitters were all set. They had a, I don't know, 50-page instruction manual from me about making sure my cats are happy while I was gone. It's not 50 pages, but it's close. And of course, prior to the day of flying, I made sure that the airline had in the system our special meal, right? So that we were, different airlines call it different things. We, in United, it's called vegetarian non-dairy. I think that's what it's called. Some places call it Hindu vegetarian non-dairy. It's always different depending on the airline, but we made sure that was in the system. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. That's why I always take precautions and take food with us. So in this case, it worked, which is amazing. So we had just, I think I had just had some food and then all of a sudden, you know, we get our meals first before anybody else. And so all of a sudden these meals came and it was kind of a shocker and it was great. So we had all this food with us and we got fed on the plane as well. So most airlines have dispensed with free meals, but on international flights, it still applies, or at least it does on United. So we fly with United most of the time. The hub is right here in San Francisco and we get our miles and everything through United. So international flights serve meals. So just make sure if you're traveling internationally, you request the vegan meal. The other thing that has made traveling a lot easier for us, and David's doing a lot more travel now as well, is we signed up to get TSA pre. And TSA pre just basically means that you're pre-approved by the TSA, by the Transportation Security Administration. Is that what it stands for? And you go through a special line in security and you don't have to remove your shoes and you don't have to take your laptop out of your bag. And it's so worth it for me because I travel so much. And even if I traveled once a year, frankly, it would be worth it for me because I don't know if you know this about me, but I have no patience at all. And so standing in a security line is kind of torture for me. And I just can't take it. And you also don't know if the security lines are going to be long. And I don't like the stress of not knowing if I'm not going to have time to get to the gate, you know, and that kind of thing. So for me, the $80 that it costs $80 and it's good for 4 years. So we're talking $20 a year is worth it to me to get on that plane and not have to worry about security, not have to take my shoes off, not have to, you don't have to worry about any of it. So type in TSA pre into your browser, start the application process. It's really easy. And like I said, I think it's worth it if you fly just once a year. That's just my opinion. It's $20 for a year. So it's worth it. It's basically for domestic flights. But when we fly internationally, there is a TSA pre-line in the international terminal. So even though we're going to another country, there's still a TSA pre-line in the international terminal. It's just when you're coming out of the country that you were just in going into the United States that you don't have a TSA pre-line. But that's only the one leg, right? So every other leg and like I said, domestic travel, it works for. So I would check it out. That's one of the reasons traveling is a little less stressful for me. And that's not including the plane ride. They can't do anything about me not being able to sleep. So David slept. I didn't. I read. I worked. It was a 10-hour flight, 10 and a half hour flight. I watched a couple movies. I had been meaning to see The Fantastic Mr. Fox, which I hadn't seen before. And it was on the plane on their movies. So I watched that. And it was so delightful. So delightful. If you haven't seen The Fantastic Mr. Fox, I recommend it. So we arrived in London. So now imagine arriving in London, just trying to get you to imagine. And we got to our hotel and it was about, let's see, 5 o'clock by the time we got to our hotel, 5 p.m., maybe 4 o'clock, but it was, you know, late afternoon. And we just kind of caught up on emails. And then I think we napped for maybe an hour. And then we didn't want to waste that night. So we went out for dinner and we went straight to Mildred's restaurant, which is in the Soho area. And it was just about a 5-minute walk from our hotel. And it was so fantastic. It was the only time we went there. I would have gone back again in a second, but I wasn't able to. The place was absolutely packed. So it's a vegetarian restaurant, a lot of vegan options in Soho. And the place was absolutely packed. We had to wait for a table, but this amazing host super energetic, super friendly, just had his stuff together. It was so impressive to watch him navigate these crowds and new people coming in. It was pretty impressive. So he sat us in about 30 minutes. In the meantime, we just had some wine. They had a whole vegetarian vegan wine menu, and we nibbled on various sundries. And then we ordered, I wasn't that hungry because I was way off on, you know, the time difference, and we had had some food before we left the hotel. But I got the soup, which was a potato cauliflower soup with parsley and truffle oil, which, hello, I think I have that very soup in like Color Me Vegan, I think. So one of my favorite combinations with truffle oil, potatoes, and cauliflower. Hello, delicious. And then I just wanted a salad, and they had an arugula salad, a rocket salad, as one of their sides. And so I didn't get their big salads. I just got this arugula salad. I've been eating so much arugula lately. I am on such an arugula kick. Like, I still eat my kale salads, but frankly, I'm like way into arugula salads right now, with some fennel and some pumpkin seeds. And I just can't get enough arugula. And I've been using my Green Goddess dressing, which is in the new 30-Day Vegan Challenge. The new 30-Day Vegan Challenge has this, if I might say so myself, an amazing Green Goddess dressing. And I've been putting that on it. So anyway, that's an aside. So I ordered the arugula salad and I loved it. It was just pretty simple and just had some red onions in it and just a nice simple vinaigrette. But I loved it. It was perfect. And then I also got some pan-seared broccoli and garlic oil. I just wanted just vegetables. And that was also a side dish. David ordered the crostini with artichoke, was also pan-seared. So it had that wonderful smoky flavor. And he also got the detox salad. The service was just fantastic. The energy was really high. The acoustics were awful, but that's just the way it is, the way the space was. And it was loud. It was hard to talk, but we managed. And I really, really want to go back there again next time we're in London. And I highly recommend it. Mildred's, Mildred's, Mildred's. Then before we headed back to our hotel, we dropped by Coach and Horses just because I wanted to check it out and kind of acclimate ourselves to it. Coach and Horses is a vegetarian pub, also about a 5-minute walk from our hotel. Just as an aside, we stayed in Leicester Square, which for David, it was about a 45-minute walk to his office, but he wanted to make sure I was in a central location so that I could go anywhere I wanted during the day and not have to fuss too much about where I was going. So he was willing to take a hotel that was a 45-minute walk for him to the office, but for me, it was really central. And it was a central location. It was kind of crazy. Leicester Square is just insane and just a lot of tourists and just a ton of people. And it was fine. I didn't love the hotel we stayed at, so I'm not even going to recommend that. But yeah, I mean, it's a great location. It's near Trafalgar Square. I mean, I don't take the tube. I pretty much walk everywhere. And so I was able to walk to everywhere I was going, which I really like. So I would, you know, it's a great place to stay. It's not like Kensington. It's not like this really quiet part of the city or anything like that, but that's where we stayed. So we were really close to everything, and especially all of these little pubs and restaurants. And so Coach and Horses is a vegetarian pub, traditional pub, and it also has a tea parlor. So we didn't get to check out the tea parlor, but we went into the pub and there's a piano there, which is pretty awesome. And so there's like a piano sing-along. And of course, all the songs are American songs and everyone was, you know, kind of mostly drunk and singing, and it was awesome. And we just kind of had a beer there, and then we went on to back to our hotel. There's also, apparently they have a vegan fish and chips on the menu, but we didn't. So when we were there that night, we weren't eating. And then I heard a rumor that there wasn't vegan fish and chips on the menu. There's still a vegetarian pub. I think that item I heard was off the menu, but then someone wrote on Facebook that they were just there and it had been on the menu. So I'm not really sure. I think it's called Toefish and Chips. And check it out. We've had tofu fish and chips before. It's wonderful and fried and decadent. So I wasn't dying to have it. It would have been novel to have it, but there you go. At Coach and Horses is the name of the pub. So we slept and had a good night's sleep. And frankly, it was our first day and I headed right to the gym and I ran for 45 minutes on the treadmill, even though I knew I'd be walking a lot that day. But I really love traveling and running. I love shaking off jet lag that way. And it starts me just kind of on the right foot. We don't check our bags when we travel. We bring carry-ons, but I always make sure I pack my running clothes and my shoes. So I don't take my normal running sneakers. I take these kind of hybrid sneakers that are, you know, they're not like my hot pink running sneakers. They are just, they're good for like walking, running, or hiking. So they're just kind of hybrid. So that way I don't have to take more than them and like a pair of dress shoes or something, dressier shoes, whatever. So I use those shoes for running, but I also use them for walking around. So it's a way to cut two carrots with one knife, if you will, and have both and not have to overpack. So I didn't run as much as I wanted to when I was there because I walked so many miles every day, but I was able to run a couple times and I was just glad to have the option. So I ran, I went back to the hotel room and I showered and dressed, and then I headed right out to Beetroot Cafe, which is also a 5-minute walk from the hotel. And it's kind of like a buffet of like vegetarian and vegan lunch items. It's very casual, and there was a lot of construction on that street when I went, so it wasn't really conducive to sitting down and enjoying the space. But they have juices and smoothies, and I was really jonesing for one of my favorite juices that I make all the time at home, which is a carrot, apple, and ginger juice. So I ordered a carrot, orange, and ginger juice, and then I was drinking it. I left the building and started drinking it and realized I ordered the wrong juice because I really missed the apple in my favorite juice. So I, whatever, survived, and I was going to be walking for several miles. And so I really wanted an apple, carrot, and ginger juice. So I stopped into a chain juice place called Joe and the Juice. They have cafes all over the place. And so I stopped in one of the Joe and Juice cafes and I got another juice and got a carrot, apple, and ginger juice. However, I started drinking that one and realized I need to ask for extra ginger whenever I order juices because it's never like I like it. I like a lot of ginger. I like it almost real spicy, but with the sweetness from the apple. And it wasn't as spicy as I liked it, but it's okay. It was good. And I grabbed a banana and I had my juice and I started my walking journey all around London. I was walking a couple miles on Regent Street. Regent Street is really beautiful, really beautiful buildings, but I mean, every chain store that you see in every other city. So it was kind of boring that way. I wasn't really interested in any of that. I'm not a big shopper. I wish I was a better shopper. I mean, I just don't shop. I don't like shopping. I don't dislike it, but I don't love shopping. So I just was booking it and just walking and walking and walking and just walking along Regent Street. And then I had to get to the Westminster Tube where I was meeting a walking guide. So when I travel and David travels, whether we do it together or alone, we always do walking tours, and every city has walking tours. And it's just a really nice way to get to know the city. There's a guide. They know the city really well. You get to know other people. You can ask questions. So we usually do at least one walking tour whenever we travel. And this one was an old Westminster tour. So I unfortunately could not get any cash out of any cash machine. So when I got there, I had no cash. I had nothing. I had no money. And they didn't take credit cards. So I groveled to the guide who let me join them on the walk and pay him later. So I was really grateful for that because I really made such an effort to get over there. And I would have been very sad if I didn't get to go on this walk. And the highlights of this walk, I mean, it was on the outside. It wasn't inside Westminster Hall or Westminster Abbey or anything like that. We'd been to Westminster Abbey in the past, where, of course, we see all of our, you know, amazing writers, authors buried. But this was on the outside and kind of the whole area. And one of the things that was really special is we were kind of behind Westminster Abbey, kind of behind it that way. And there's this Buxton Memorial Fountain. And it's this really beautiful fountain. I mean, it's not a fountain in the sense that you see like water trickling. It kind of almost looks like the top of some elaborate building because it's a little squat, but it was really beautifully designed, really gorgeous. And it commemorates the emancipation of slaves in the British Empire. And that happened in 1834. So I saw that and the guide was talking and he said, this is the commemoration of the slaves in the British Empire. And I glanced down at this little plaque and I saw some names. And my first thought was, well, I hope William Wilberforce is on there because he was the main impetus in ending the slave trade in the British Empire. And I didn't see it at first. And I'm thinking, well, he better be there. And if you know anything about British history or animal rights history or anything about my work, you know that I have talked about William Wilberforce at length in previous episodes, and especially in the context of the shoulders on which we stand as advocates. He was amazing. And he was one of the founders of the Royal Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, the RSPCA. And so I'm just in awe of this man for so many reasons and because of the work that he did for humans and non-humans. And so it was really funny. So his name was on there And then our guide said, and you're going to love what's on the other side of this fountain. Let's see if you can see what that is. And he pointed down to what was basically a water bowl for dogs, you know, dogs, probably cats as well, probably other critters, to be honest. But he purposefully designed, he being Samuel Sanders Toulon was the designer, he purposefully built in a water bowl that dogs would be able to use, or, you know, animals would be able to use, because it's right there on the ground on the low part of the fountain. And it was just so cool because at that moment, so I love that our guide was actually really excited about that, and he thought it was just so lovely. But I also just loved that there's this connection between Wilberforce and the work he did to end slavery and the work he did to protect non-human animals. And there was this bowl for dogs. I just can't imagine that was a coincidence. Maybe Toulon himself was an animal lover, or he knew what Wilberforce did in his work to protect animals. So I just thought that was really cool. So that was kind of a highlight. And then we just walked behind Westminster Abbey Moor and these gorgeous Georgian streets lined with these old gas lamps. It was just so beautiful. And now it was like evening. It was like 4 o'clock and the sun was going down, and it was this cool, crisp fall evening, just gorgeous. And we just happened upon this house where T.E. Lawrence rewrote his masterpiece, The Seven Pillars of Wisdom. And you would know this if you heard of the movie Lawrence of Arabia. It was a David Lean film, this epic film, which I absolutely love. It's one of my, it's probably not my top 10 films, but I mean, in my top 100 films for sure. And it's based on T.E. Lawrence, his book, The Seven Pillars of Wisdom. Well, he had written The Seven Pillars of Wisdom and he lost the manuscript. And so he lived in this house that we just happened upon when he rewrote or retranscribed from memory this manuscript, which was thousands and thousands of words. I mean, it was just amazing that he was able to rewrite it. And David just finished reading The Seven Pillars of Wisdom like 6 months ago. So it was such a treat to be able to take a picture of the plaque that said T.E. Lawrence lived here and send it to David. It was really sweet. And then there was another woman on the walk who was also solo. And we kind of struck up a conversation and we went to a pub for a drink after the walk ended. And then I made my way back to Soho to meet David for dinner. And we went to Amico Bio. I want to say bio. It's B-I-O, bio, but in Italian, it would be Amico Bio. And it's an organic Italian vegetarian restaurant in London. And it's in a lovely part of town. We walked there from our hotel. It was about a 10-minute walk from our hotel. And the wine list was extensive and the menu was huge. It was all vegetarian and a lot of vegan options. So we started with this big bread basket. And it was probably the most lovely part. It was all these different kinds of breads. And then we had a verdure salad and a pasta with olives and capers, which were delicious. And that was kind of our starter. And then, no, maybe that was our entree. The starter was the bread and the salad, and then the pasta with olives and capers. I guess that was kind of our entree. But it was good. I think they have a little bit of a macrobiotic slant to their menu. And so for me, I found some of the dishes to be a little flavorless. Like all they had to do was drizzle some pesto sauce or red sauce on the verdure salad, for instance. You know, it was like artichokes and that kind of thing. And the artichokes were just kind of plain. Like they weren't really flavored. It was kind of like steamed vegetables. Not all of the dishes. The pasta dishes were very good. But I just think there should have been more of an Italian influence, and I think there's more of a macrobiotic influence. So I would try them again, and I do recommend going. You have to go to an Italian vegetarian restaurant in London. And the space was really lovely, and the wine list was really good, and the service was really sweet. But don't hesitate to encourage a little more flavor and a little more salt if necessary. I wish I had done that, and I would do that again in the future. But I would recommend them still. So Amico Bio, A-M-I-C-O is the first word. And then B-I-O is the second word. And you can find all of this at joyfulvegan.com. You know, I was blogging every day. So some of this information that I'm talking about here, or a lot of it, I'm just giving you more detail, is on the joyfulvegan.com website under Read. And you can see all the blog posts and you can see the links to all these places. So day three, woke up, went for a run, and I had three goals this day. This day, I had three goals, very specific goals. I wanted to visit the animals in War Memorial. I wanted to find the Victorian Pet Cemetery, and I wanted to locate the Two Bears Hugging Fountain, all of which is in Hyde Park. And it was Halloween, so it was pretty perfect. And the weather was unbelievable. I was plotzing all over the place because it was just the most perfect, beautiful fall day walking through Hyde Park. So I walked there. It was a couple mile walk to Hyde Park. And it was Halloween. I wasn't looking for the cemetery because it was Halloween, but it was kind of cool to see a graveyard from 150 years ago that pays homage to people's dogs and cats. So that was one of the things that was on my list, but it was kind of cool that it was Halloween as well. So I found the Animals in War Memorial with no problem. It's funny because I was walking through Hyde Park and I was kind of near, what is it, Speaker's Corner there. And I was looking at my map on my phone and I kept walking past the memorial, and a friend of mine, Tim, who you've heard me talk about, Tim Anderson, who's a wonderful friend and supporter, he had sent me pictures of the Animals in War Memorial when he was there last year. So I knew it was large, but I kept looking at the map and I kept passing it. So then I realized, oh, it's across the street. And I thought, oh, that's a bummer. It should be right in Hyde Park. I wish people could just see it right from the park. And then I realized it's actually on this median between two streets, each going in the other direction. And so it's really prominent. And I'm getting emotional talking about it because you can see it driving past in either direction. And people walk across and past it. They have to get to this main street. And so it was so moving. So it's a memorial to animals who've been used, forced into combat over the last several centuries. So the memorial itself is so poignant and the design is so beautiful. And there are impressions of camels and horses and donkeys and mules and birds and elephants. Just so thoughtfully done. I think this was built about or put up finally about 10 years ago, I think. But I feel like the unveiling was recent. I could have sworn it was more recent than that. But when I looked at the inscription, it looked like it was 10 years ago. So I have the pictures of it on my website. And I really recommend you go there. And just, it was just really beautiful. I was moved to tears when I first saw it. And I just sat there and kind of sat there for about a half hour and watching people walk by and their reactions to it. It was so beautiful to see people stop. Like, you're kind of forced to stop and look. So go look at the pictures of these gorgeous sculptures and the gorgeous stone sculpture, and it's striking. And it was good because I was meeting Jennifer, the woman I had met the day before. So I had met her and we had drinks at the pub, and I knew she was going to go to another walking tour. And I had, like I said, I wanted to run in the morning. And so we decided to meet at Hyde Park at the Animals in War Memorial. And I'm glad she came about a half hour after I did, because I really needed some solitary time to take in the monument. It was just incredible. So, and I will be doing a video. I have a video of it and I'll talk more about it on that video. So Jennifer met me and then we began our adventure to find the cemetery and soak in the beauty of Hyde Park. It was, again, just stunning. So we were just walking through the park and talking about literature and Harry Potter. She's a huge Harry Potter fan. And I was learning some things about Harry Potter because I know nothing about it. And there's this gorgeous lake and I wanted to get out on the lake. We did not get a boat out on the lake, but next time I would go back to Hyde Park and get a boat on the lake. It could not have been a more perfect day. It was so picturesque. So we found the cemetery and we were really disappointed to discover that it's not open to the public and it's very hidden. It's super, super hidden. So unless you knew it was there, you wouldn't see it. And so we felt very victorious because it's really hidden, but we were able to squeeze our cameras like through the slats of the iron fence and take some pictures. So again, those are on my website as well. And it was just really special because we could see the inscriptions on some of the gravestones, the headstones, and they were just lovely. Like, to my cat who kept me company for 15 years, we miss you so much. I mean, this whole cemetery was built in the Victorian era. So if I ever go back, I'm going to see if I can get in touch with Hyde Park officials and see if I can get in there. Maybe it's better that it's hidden because I don't know if vandals would do some creepy things. So maybe it's better that it's hidden, but it was special. I'm glad we got there. And then the Two Bears Hugging Fountain is just a pretty small fountain, but it was pretty fun to find it because we were looking on a map right outside the cemetery, and there's a map in the park. There's several maps in the park, and there was a map of the park, and there were all these other fountains named, and we couldn't see the Two Bears Hugging. And I learned about the Two Bears Hugging, I think, from Animals Asia, the bear organization. And I just really wanted to see this fountain because I just wanted to see another kind of monument to animals. And we were standing at this map and we just couldn't find it. And we looked on our phone map and description and we just couldn't find it. And we just said, yeah, I guess, you know, it's not meant to be and it's too bad. And I quite literally said, we'll just go. And if we see it, we see it, you know, c'est la vie. If it happens, it happens. And we took about two steps and we looked ahead of us and we go, there it is. It's right there. It was in front of us. I mean, practically right in front of us. And it was just this lovely moment because it was so funny. We laughed so hard because we had spent 15 minutes trying to find it on the map. And it was in front of us the whole time. So I accomplished all three goals and I was very happy about that. So then we walked all the way through Hyde Park and to Kensington. And Kensington's beautiful for anybody who knows who's been there. Obviously, Kensington is a very affluent part of London and it's incredibly gorgeous and picturesque and kind of quintessential London, Georgian London, just beautiful. So we tucked into some generic restaurant and had some late lunch, some salads and pasta. Nothing I would recommend, but you know, just goes to show you can go to any cafe and we got some pasta with red sauce and some salads and again, wine and we were happy. Now I had to get back to the hotel very quickly and just freshen up. I had about 15 minutes to freshen up and meet David at the Old Vic Theater. We were seeing Elektra with Kristin Scott Thomas. I'm sure many of you know her. She's a renowned actress and we've actually seen her quite a few times live now because she was at the Toronto Film Festival for films she had done. She does a lot of French films. She's just incredibly versatile. And she was playing Elektra in Elektra. And so we went to the Old Vic Theater. It was really fabulous. The production was great. Elektra is a really hard character to like. So yeah. Don't love Elektra. Don't love Elektra, the character. But the cast was fantastic and it was lovely. And so it was still Halloween and it was a very energetic city and it was crazy. I can't believe how many people are in London. I feel like there's more people in London than in New York. I'm sure that's the case. So we went back to Coach and Horses and sadly the kitchen was closed. So we couldn't get any tofu fish and chips or tofish and chips. But we just met Jennifer there. So it was her last night there. And we had some drinks and then we went on. And day four in London was pretty much just walking around a bit. David finally wasn't working and he had some time away from the office and we just acted like tourists and we didn't have an itinerary really. We were, again, walking distance to the National Portrait Gallery. We were so close to Trafalgar Square that we walked over there and I had been wanting to go to the Portrait Gallery for years. There's the National Gallery and then there's the National Portrait Gallery and I quite fell in love with it. It's pretty remarkable, always shocking when you can walk into a museum and not have to pay. I'm happy to pay because I want to support the arts, but it's just so different than what we're used to here in the United States. So we went in and we spent a good part of an hour there. And then we joined thousands of others on Trafalgar Square on another gorgeous fall day. Now, this was November 1st by now, and it was officially World Vegan Day. And my understanding was, I think there was a big PETA demonstration there that morning, but we didn't see it. There were a lot of other demonstrators there for other things. And I was really excited because the last time we were in London, I know I saw Trafalgar Square from a distance, but we didn't get close to it. And I think because there were just so many people, and I'm just usually allergic to that many people, but it didn't bother me this time. And we went right up to the Bronze Lions, which are at the base of Nelson's Column. And again, if you've heard me talk about animals in the arts, you've heard me talk about Sir Edwin Landseer. He's an artist. He was an animal artist. He lived from 1802 to 1873. And he's featured in the podcast episode, go to joyfulvegan.com and the blog post for this day, because I actually linked directly to that episode. But he was the one who designed and created these lions. And they were so massive. Like, I don't know that I knew how large they were. I mean, I did know, but I couldn't believe how large they were. And they're gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous. So Landseer was a renowned animal artist. And his lions were just really fabulous. And you can see them in Trafalgar Square, like I said, at the base of Nelson's Column. So we were hungry at that point and we wanted some lunch and we found Sagar, which is a southern Indian vegetarian restaurant. Most South Indian places are vegetarian and South Indian cuisine is my favorite. I actually don't even go to northern Indian restaurants. I know there's probably some that are out there that are good, but I don't tend to love northern Indian cuisine. I love southern Indian cuisine. So David found Sagar, S-A-G-A-R, and Southern Indian, like I said, it tends to be more vegetarian. They tend to be vegetarian-only places, and they feature dosas. So dosas are the big crepes, and uthapams, which are the big pancakes and with vegetables in them. And I just love dosas, and David loves uthapams, and we went there. And we have a favorite here in, there are a lot of South Indian places here in the East Bay, in Berkeley especially, and there's one of our favorites called Adupi Palace. And that's kind of the barometer by which I measure other South Indian a restaurant. So it was okay. I mean, it was fine. I would recommend it. It was decent enough. Probably not the most glowing endorsement, but it was good. And I was glad to have some South Indian cuisine. If you're not comparing it to anything, I think it's great. I think you'd love it. But if you're comparing it to a favorite restaurant, then it was okay. It was good. And then we kind of had a vague notion of going to see the Charles Dickens house, Charles Dickens Museum. And we were just walking around that area and we happened upon it just a little too late. They had just sold the last tour and we weren't able to get in. But I was able to, we stepped inside and we could see the vestibule and imagine what it would have been like living with his family, you know, 150 years ago or so. So it was nice to see, and it was a really pretty neighborhood. So we walked around and then we made our way up to London Vegan Drinks. And I had mentioned before that this was an event that is put on by Fat Gay Vegan, Sean, and he's just fabulous. He's just so fabulous. Sean, if you're listening, you're fabulous. And he puts these events on in London, London Vegan Drinks. I think they do potlucks. They do lots of other events. And it just happened to be the time that I was there that they were having London Vegan Drinks and it was World Vegan Day. So a lot of you came out and showed up and shared your love. And it was really lovely. Sean just puts on such fantastic events. And it was at Caramel Restaurant, which is now a vegetarian restaurant and art space owned by none other than the woman who founded World Vegan Day 20 years ago. So it was this really lovely link between all of these things. And the room was packed with energetic and smiling, wonderful vegans. And we were just, it was a very positive vibe. It was really lovely. And I know I often talk about how important it is for vegans to be part of a community of like-minded people. And Sean's events really afford just that. So they're not to be missed. If you're in the London area, I highly recommend checking out Fat Gay Vegan and getting involved and just being part of it. Just go and eat some food and drink some beer and it's great. So I was really grateful to connect with all of you. Thank you for coming out. And I said a few words to the crowd and I was really impressed. My only regret is that I didn't get a picture with Sean. So we're just going to have to do it again. I'm just going to have to come back. And I really do relish the opportunity to go back. And so finally, after a couple hours, I had to run out to meet my husband. I feel kind of bad because we were trying to pack too much in. And a high school friend of ours lives in London with his wife. And so I ran out, you know, finally to go meet them. And the pub was closing. And apparently, what did David tell me? The pub itself, I'm not going to remember the name of it now. If you're really interested, email me and I'll be able to get it to you. But apparently the pub itself brews its own beer and they had lots of different beer. And I'm not a beer drinker, so I didn't have any because they were also closing. But David said they made a point to say on the menu that all the beer is vegetarian so that it's not filtered or made with any animal products. So that was pretty cool. It was like a total, that was totally random. And we didn't pick it for that reason. It was just a pub that Tom, our friend, had picked. So We went back home and we packed to go on to our next adventure, which was Ireland. And I look forward to sharing that adventure with you and food and tips and travel and landmarks and sites and little hidden gems that you might not know about. We had quite the nightmare. We flew from London to Belfast. And then we drove up north to go see the Giant's Causeway and some other really beautiful natural wonders. And then we had a nightmare. And I will tell you all about it on the next episode when I talk about vegan in Ireland, in north of Belfast and in Dublin. But before we go, I want to make sure that we have time for a few What Would Colleen Do questions. And again, thanks to all of you listener supporters, and thank you to AAVS, the American Anti-Vivisection Society, at AAVS.org. Please support the Humane Cosmetics Act. We can make this happen. I don't want to keep saying this. Like the next episode, I want to be able to say, we passed it. We did it. We did it. Even though we're now switching over to a new Congress, and so we're going to have to... Some of you are probably going to have to tell your Congress people again, because it's a lot of new Congress people. But let's do it. Let's stay on top of it. If you have written to your Congressperson and you know that they're going out and a new one's coming in, let the new one coming in know. So write again and tell everybody you know. So go to aavs.org/Humane Cosmetics Act. And thank you, of course, to Fake Meats, fakemeats.com, selling a huge variety of vegan meats and vegan jerky and egg replacers for your vegan pleasure. And you can get gift baskets and anything you need for the holidays coming up. I think it's a great idea for gifts. I love the idea of getting it for your like mail carrier. Get those gifts. It's such a wonderful way to advocate for veganism and give a gift to someone at the same time. And of course, use your coupon code podcast14 over at fakemeats.com. So before we go into our WWCPGD section, we're going to listen to some music from Ghost of Burling. Well, thank you, Ghost of Burling. I want to let you know that their new LP is coming out soon. You can find their awesome music at ghostofburling.com. Find them on Facebook. Follow their work. They should be having some live shows come up. Yes, that's my husband and his band. And they work so hard. My husband works so hard. And then he, you know, works so hard on his music. He practices every week at their studio. And they've been finishing this LP, and it's been a long time because they're all professionals. They're doing this out of love of music. So it's hard for four professionals to get together and write music and, you know, get into the studio and record and produce it and all of it. So support them by checking them out, ghostofburling.com. You can buy their individual tracks or you can buy their albums. They're all up there at ghostofburling.com. So on to WWCPGD. Is that it? What would Colleen do? This is our time together for me to answer your questions. And you can tweet at WWCPGD or What Would Colleen Do? Or you can go to joyfulvegan.com and click on contact to ask your questions because I love taking your call. I take them once a week and I love hearing from you. So please call. You can find the phone number and the information about calling at joyfulvegan.com. I certainly do not have all the answers. Goodness knows I don't, but I do have a lot of opinions and I am happy to share them if you ask. So I want to start with an email. It's actually from Laura. She was a lovely listener at the Vegan Drinks and she wrote a letter. Hello, Colleen. It's time I made myself known. I'm Laura Bennett and I'm 23 years old. I'm a testament to all the shadow listeners you have out there, drinking up your every word, but feeling paralyzed in reaching out to you the way you so graciously reach out to us. And for that, I sincerely apologize. There's no need, Laura. I've been listening to Food for Thought for about a year now. I went vegan after Christmas 2013. I couldn't cope with the guilt of consuming animal secretions any longer, and I sought help, and I found you. I found your amazing YouTube videos first. That's awesome. I love that. And watched every one of your incredible heartfelt speeches, and to my delight, you even had a podcast, so I quickly subscribed. I'm a budding self-taught artist. You can check out my work at Oddness, which is really, I really recommend everybody check out her work. It's so fantastic. It's ODD, odd, and then KNESS, Ness. So Oddness. It's all animal-based watercolor work. I've always felt drawn to animals and felt the need to tell their story. My work changed from being quite evocative and cruelty-based, see oddness.com/dairy, to making artwork that reflects how animals inspire me, see oddness.com/chameleon-commission. You can find all of this on her website. I felt I couldn't make provocative work anymore since it wouldn't pay the bills, and I abandoned art school feeling quite deflated as they hated my anti-cruelty-based messages. And at the time, I felt vulnerable to this and felt powerless that I couldn't awaken, quote unquote, my peers in any creative medium. I find your gentle, nurturing, and heartfelt approach to teaching compassionate living to be very effective. It makes people feel at ease to change their behaviors, to fully embrace a kinder alternative. I don't know if I could have kept up the veganism without you. Before my joyful veganism, I had been vegetarian since I was 16, and my partner has been vegetarian for 17 years. Thanks, Colleen. Well, for being so gracious toward me on Saturday night as I fumbled around what to say and then quickly ran out the door. I'm sure I'll do better when you visit London in the future. You are my hero. I love you. I love your work. And I will drop a small donation on your site to say thanks. And when my artwork develops and picks up, I have big ambitions of becoming a CPGD patron to fully support all that you do. Find us regards. As for my question, thank you, Laura, so much. Thank you. And your work is really, I'm so impressed. You're so talented. And Laura also has an Etsy account. So go check out her work and you can get her prints. Beautiful, beautiful artwork. So she wrote, continued, anyway, being a vegan, I find it crippling to buy dinner or lunch for Chris, her partner of 7 years, if what he's ordering contains dairy or eggs. I've been quietly seething, actually, and I feel really bad about it. I've since talked about it with him and we've agreed if he's ordering meals which contain dairy or eggs, I won't offer to pay for the meal. But what if my parents, who are not vegetarian, or my non-vegetarian friends, for whom my veganism is quite a contentious issue right now, are ordering animal bits and pieces and I want to treat them, but then I feel bad for condoning them eating animals and I'd feel responsible in a huge way as the money is coming directly out of my pocket to support the cruelty to animals. I wonder what your opinion is on this. You know, so it sounds like you worked it out with Chris. Obviously, it's easier with people who are very close to you to be able to express your concern and your feelings about it. And it sounds like that is a really good solution. So I'm glad you figured that out with Chris. When it comes to friends and family, you know, I don't know. I might be in the minority here and there might be people who think otherwise. I don't want to condone the consumption of animals and the violence against animals. So much of it has to do with kind of the clarity that we bring to who we are and what we believe and how we live to the people we know. And I think really, I've said this before, what makes a huge difference is how we present it and how we think about what we're doing. If we think we're doing something wrong or we're putting people out or we're being apologetic about it, then people read that. And I think they respond accordingly. But if we just say, hey, I'd love to buy you dinner, but I ain't going to buy you anything if you're getting meat. I'll buy you if you get some vegan. Then we've set the rules for ourselves. We've set the boundaries. And they will probably say, okay, sure, you're going to buy me dinner. Yeah, I'll get vegan. That's fine. No problem. Or you could say it differently. That's my tone, right? You could say it like, I would love to buy you dinner, and but I'm going to buy you vegan dinner. And if you have any questions, I'm happy to help, but I would love to buy you dinner, but you got to eat vegan. Like, just kind of make it playful and not a big deal. And you might find that they also say, no, don't worry about it. I really don't want to get vegan. I want to eat meat. And that might feel a little worse for you because they're really dedicated to having meat and they'd rather have meat than have a free meal. But that's not yours. You've set the boundary in terms of paying and that's all you can do. So I personally think if you set the boundary with your friends and family, that means if you do it once, maybe you'll have to do it twice. They know in the future that that's pretty much the way it goes. And it doesn't have to be a big deal. We don't have to make this, you know, declaration to people or formal meeting or, you know, send an email beforehand. We can just go with the flow, let them know how we feel and just move on. And if someone comes to us later and says, I thought that was really rude of you and I was really offended by that, you can say, well, I'm sorry you feel that way. Why would I pay for something that supports something that I don't believe in, that I don't even believe you believe in? I don't want either of us to be responsible for that. And so why would I condone that, right? Then we can have that conversation later. But I think it's a matter of just kind of setting your boundaries, setting your rules and being clear about it and being joyful about it. And the rest isn't yours. So that's my opinion. Someone else will probably have another one, but you didn't ask them, or maybe you did, but you asked me and there you go. So thanks, Laura. Thank you again for your sweet message and for your question. Next, we have a call from Alma.
So the other question is about salmon. And when people say, well, you know, when I say about oceans are overfished, it's not sustainable. Well, they say, well, not salmon, not Pacific salmon, as far as they know. And they're like, and besides, if we don't eat them, they'll die anyway, whether, you know, when they go and lay their eggs and then they die or bears will take them.
Yeah.
Are their numbers diminishing?
Yeah, so here's the facts. I'm laughing because if no one killed us, we would die eventually too. That's like really not a good reason for like for doing something. So anyway, so that's just fine. So as far as salmon, we have wiped out the wild salmon population on the East Coast. That's a fact. We have wiped out 90% of the salmon on the West Coast. So we have completely wiped out. We are in the process of wiping out these fish, these carnivorous, high on the food chain fish. 90% of the salmon eaten in the United States are raised on aquatic farms. And like with any animal factory system, you've got fish in intensive confinement where they see, this is the thing, they're in intensive confinement. So that's already a problem. I mean, that's already a problem that we're using an ecosystem to confine, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of animals and confining them. Now, someone might not feel sympathy for the salmon who, you know, what do they travel? Hundreds of miles, right? When they're spawning. I mean, like hundreds of miles. So that's just one thing, is that you're confining all of these fish. And of course they're going to feel frustration. Of course they are. They want to move. They want to swim. They want to, you know, leave. Mm-hmm. But if that doesn't move them, what's really a fact is that we're confining them. And with all animal confinement systems, because they're going to be more susceptible to disease, we have to give them lots of antibiotics and pesticides in these big, huge tanks, essentially. And there's also lots of other pollutants that they're absorbing because these are carnivorous fish. Mm-hmm. And so in order to feed these animals, they're fed a cheap diet of what's called fish meal, which is comprised of wild caught fish. So farm raising isn't an, if I'm farm raising any animal isn't an answer, right? Because they're not meant to be confined like this. So you tell them, okay, you've got two choices. They're wrong when they say that we're not wiping out the populations in the Pacific. They're just wrong. And you can go find that information very easily. And so you say to them, we're wiping out the populations. And so what's the solution? Is the solution is that 90% of the salmon people are eating in the United States, they are farm raised. And when you're farm raising them, you're contributing not only to the, you know, to the fact that these animals are being raised with pollutants and pesticides and antibiotics, and they're also consuming the heavy metals as if they were in the wild, because they're eating the fish, wild fish that are caught to feed to these salmon, and these wild caught fish are laden with mercury and heavy metals. So that's a real problem. It's a real problem. Mm-hmm. We're messing with the ecosystems of course the land and the oceans, and it's a real problem.
It's definitely not sustainable.
It is not. It's not sustainable. And you can easily find statistics, very clear statistics, on what this is doing to the oceans and the entire food chain in the ocean. So no, it's not sustainable.
Okay. Incidentally, salmon was the last thing I gave up. I don't want to say gave up, but stopped eating.
Yeah, no, I think that's sweet that you corrected yourself. I do the same thing. Salmon was probably one of the last things. Salmon and shrimp. I think I gave up shrimp earlier, and then I think salmon was one of the last things I ate as well.
I remember your podcast on shrimp where you said, wow, like 80 to 90% bycatch.
Yeah.
That just stuck with me.
Yeah, that's really striking.
That's a lot, huge number. Yeah. Thank you so much, Colleen.
You're welcome, Alma. Thank you.
I really appreciate taking my call.
My pleasure. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Alma. And then finally, I want to include one more question from, oh my dear, do I not have the name? From a lovely woman. I can't remember the name. And she wrote, I am new to the vegan lifestyle, and I have a question regarding purchasing a vehicle with leather. I have a 2003 Explorer I need to replace, and I have been car shopping. It hurts my heart to think of purchasing something with leather. I get in these beautiful vehicles to test drive, but I sit in the leather seats and I just want to cry. I foster and volunteer to transport animals for my rescue, so cloth isn't a good solution either, and it's always the base models with cloth. They don't have the amenities I would like. I'm needing a bigger vehicle, Honda Pilot or Ford Expedition, so I have room for large crates. Leatherette isn't an option from the factory. I feel like I'm being forced into leather in order to get a vehicle that has all the other things I want. What would you do? Well, I mean, you know the answer. You said your heart hurts and you want to cry when you're sitting in a car with leather. So I think it's pretty clear what you want and what you should do. You need to just go with your gut. I'm not going to tell you what to do. I do think, I don't know, you said that cloth isn't a good solution. And you said they don't have the amenities I would like because they're the base models. I don't know about the other amenities. I do think cloth, though, if you're using your car for transporting rescue animals, you can just get things to lay down on top of the seats. We recently just got covers for our seats. Our car's 10 years old, and the seats have been stained forever from just whatever, you know, just from dogs that I've had in the car. And was probably something that spilled. And every time someone gets in the passenger seat, I would like cringe because it's so dirty, but it's just a stain. And we're very clean people and our car is spotless in every other way. So finally, I just couldn't take it anymore. I don't know why it took me 10 years. And I know we could probably have gotten it cleaned by some, you know, intense industrial cleaner. A friend of mine had been recommending a place, but I just didn't do it. And so finally, I just got these covers, the seat covers. And they take like 15 minutes to put on. They're not something you would just take on and off very quickly, but it took 15 minutes. It's not that long. And then you can wash them, take them off, wash them, and put them back on again. So I don't really agree that the cloth would be wrong for you, even though you do animal rescue. As far as the other amenities, I can't speak to them because I don't know what else you're not getting. It sounds like you're trying to get everything, and you might not be able to get everything, but what I do encourage you to get is clarity and respect for your own feelings, because you have made it clear that it's really upsetting for you. And if you're that upset getting into a car for a test drive, you're not going to want to live like that and drive that all the time, especially rescuing animals. So I would really encourage you to go with your gut. You already know what to do. And there's ways to get around the whole cloth part that the animals would be sitting on for the rescue situations. Okay, so good luck. Let me know. I want to know. I always love follow-up. So let me know how it goes. So that's all I have. Everyone, thank you for listening. If you like what you've heard, please post a review on iTunes, by the way, and Stitcher, and support this work. Go to joyfulvegan.com. It's such an honor to do this work. It's gratifying to know it makes a difference. You can just imagine what it feels like when someone tells you that you're their hero, and you heard two of them say that today in today's episode. So I'm humbled and grateful for all of you. I would not be able to do this work without you. So please contribute to it if you value it. And I'm creating more content. The more you can support me, the more I can keep doing. You're seeing the videos over at YouTube I'm putting out every week. We've got this podcast, my website, writing, blogging. You know, I just wrote this editorial for NPR again. I don't get paid for any of this. So your support is what drives my work. And if you want me to keep doing what I'm doing, I need you to keep doing what you're doing. So thank you so much. Thank you again to AAVS.org, American Anti-Vivisection Society. Thank you to Fake Meats, fakemeats.com. Go over and get your vegan meats and use the coupon code podcast14. And thanks, everybody. For the animals, this is Colleen Patrick-Goudreau. Thanks for listening.